and you know it.
With a tear in my eye,
the queen of the crop,
acknowledge me.
What's up, everybody? Episode 318 of Top Rope Nation, here to discuss AEW Full Gear 2023. I'm Ryan Drosty, joined by my guy Justin Joint, who I actually had the privilege of watching most of the show with last night. There was a brief break in our hanging out, but we still were able to watch it together. Justin, Sunday afternoon, how you doing, sir?
Damn kids, man. Damn kids, I tell you, they ruin everything. I gotta say though, you are sounding pretty chipper for a man who's literally watching the Bears lose at right at this very second.
You know, you have a 12-point lead with just a couple of minutes left, and our conservative coach thinking, oh, just taking field goals when you only need 1 yard to a first down and put this game away. This is what happens. But you know, Justin, you know my emotional investment in the Bears is not as high as professional wrestling right now. I'm still thinking about the future. You know, they got some good moves ahead of them, I think, coming up in the next couple of years.
I was trying to convince you before we went on air to just start dreaming about two top five picks in that draft coming up.
It may happen. The defense playing a lot better though. I mean, I think they're getting close as a team. Add a couple more pieces and they'll have a pretty good roster, hopefully, or at least that's what I can keep telling myself. But we are not here to talk about the Bears. You don't want to hear me complain for an hour. So we're going to talk about pro wrestling, which Justin, this show,
I thought you were going to say we're going to talk about the Bulls.
Oh God, that would be even worse. So that more frustrating to me than the Bears. Believe that.
God,
this, the Cubs are keeping me happy these days, but you know, but Full Gear. Okay. I saw a lot of discourse online, people bashing this show last night and kind of confused. I mean, there's some things on the show that I wasn't super happy about, maybe I could make like little gripes here and there. I mean, but as a whole, I thought it was a pretty good show. What was your grade for Full Gear?
Well, I mean, my honest grade would be an incomplete because, you know, as we alluded to previously, I missed almost an entire hour of this show because started it at your house and then I ended up having to take the boy home, and of course he wanted me to put him down for bed instead of the wife, so that kept me there even longer. And by the time I made it back to your house, it was in the middle of the Will Ospreay announcement. So I would just say, from what I saw and just based on results for the matches I missed, I would probably go B-, maybe. I was never really bored. And I mean, you know, you talk about how you grade these things all the time, and one of those key points is there at least one match that you would go back and watch? And I think there was an absolute stone cold classic on this show.
Yes. Well, that's going to be the first one we talk about. As the featured thumbnail on this show, the Texas Death Match was absolutely incredible. Boy, you're a little lower than I thought you were going to go on this one. I'm debating that B+, A- range because it does have the match of the year contender. I don't know. I've been thinking about this. I don't think it's my match of the year, but I would have it in my top five probably right now. I mean, so you got that going for it. Nothing egregiously bad on the show. I'm going to be generous. I'm going to go A-. I'll go A- on it. And, you know, looking at our Twitter poll here, we had 119 voters. And 46% taking it home at an A, 25% with the B. I mean, roughly like 75% are giving this an A or a B. The other people, they're just trolling to me. I mean, I can't imagine going lower than a B on this one. It was extremely entertaining, about 4 hours, which is where they've been pretty much for most of their shows lately. A little bit tighter card than they have had in the last few pay-per-views. We had, what, 9 matches on the main show? Maybe, actually. Yeah,
I think. Yeah. It still went to about 11 o'clock, though, didn't it? It was still about a 4-hour show.
8 matches on the main show, 3 on the pre-show. We are not going to talk about the pre-show in the interest of time on this review, but we'll just throw out, love you, Eddie Kingston. Glad to see him retain. And you know, Claudio and Buddy Matthews, I enjoyed that one too. MJF obviously teamed with Samoa Joe. They retained over the guns and all that happened on the pre-show. So we had that on here. You were here. We were eating dinner during the pre-show, but we're mostly going to concentrate on the main show here. And if you're joining us live in the chat right now, give us your grade, A through F for Full Gear last night. If you want to get your comment featured in the show, as always, we do have the super chat function available now, both on our channel and SC Scoops. And appreciate SC Scoops as always for sponsoring this show and letting us stream to their channel. So yeah, we're pretty high on this, Justin.
Yeah, I thinking about it, and I think maybe I am a little low with that B minus, but going back in which the way we watched it is, you know, we watched those first two matches and under very like distracting circumstances with our kids just feeding off of each other and constant fighting and hollering. And just like, so it was hard to really zone in. I know that Moxley and Orange match is definitely one I would like to go back and revisit because it was getting a lot of praise. And I that was one I was definitely trying to focus in on. But you know, the other thing is that hurts this show is I thought it was a pretty weak crowd, that they were pretty quiet for a whole lot of it.
I was going to bring that up as part of why I was going back and forth between like A minus and B plus. That was one of the weaknesses. And it was interesting because in the post show scrum, like MJF really put over the crowd, TK put over the crowd. And I don't know if I'm just out to lunch in this, but I didn't think that crowd was good at all. I mean, there was different sections in the show, specifically the TBS title match that really stood out to me, where they were just dead silent. We're spoiled living near Chicago, Justin.
Yeah.
These wrestling crowds, because I thought that crowd was weak last night.
Yeah. And I don't know how much of it is, you know, the crowd or if it's just the way they were mic'd up for this show, because there would be parts where it looked like they were being loud, but it didn't really sound like it. Because I thought they were pretty quiet for the opening six man, you know, you had absolute legends in that match. And I thought they were kind of sitting on their hands a little bit.
And I've always heard the Forum is a really loud venue.
Yeah, too.
And it did not come across that way. So I see John is in our chat, finally made it into a live show. We're hoping some of our UK fans get on here because we're trying to get this show going, Justin, early in the day so we could get people from all around the world tuning into Top Rope Nation. And usually when we record during the week, we're late at night, so the UK can never tune in live. So hopefully we'll be hearing from some of you as we go. John said B plus A minus for him as well. But yeah, that's a great point. I thought the crowd was was kind of on the low bar last night.
But one match they certainly livened up for was that Texas Death Match. They came alive for that one.
Incredible. Which
you would have to be dead inside to not come alive for that match.
I mean, this is when you made it back to my house. Luckily we had to watch this one together and we were going nuts. And at one point my wife walked down and she heard us screaming like, oh my God, what are they? And she actually made an appearance right after the blood drinking spot. And my two older daughters were watching this and I thought my wife might divorce me then and there. And I was like, I'll cover their eyes.
I thought I was about to see a Texas death match between you two. She was not happy.
She was not happy about it. And it was pretty extreme. It was even more extreme than I imagined. I mean, I knew it was going to be pretty violent. We've seen these before, but holy shit. I mean, only gripe I could have with it was that maybe it went a little long. They might have missed the peak a little bit.
Yes.
I mean, you mentioned when we watched it that, you know, like the cinder block spot at the end probably wasn't necessary, just judging on how much of a beatdown it was. And then when you're going to finish him off with the chain, you know, Hangman got hung by Swerve with the chain. I mean, you didn't really need that spot. And you mentioned that it was, you know, kind of obvious. It was a fake block the way it happened. I mean, we're nitpicking. This is definitely a match of the year contender. Don't get me wrong. But yeah, I mean, those were my only nitpicks with that, I would say.
Actually, and I would throw in what John Hope just added in the chat. That was going to be my third little nitpick was I don't think the Brian Cage bit was necessary. True. I think he could have kind of gotten to the same result with just, you know, Prince Nana running in. You could just do all of that. But yeah, just a little too long. They missed their peak. The cinder block was just a little too gimmicked for my liking. But holy shit, man. These guys were trying to kill each other. I think this was the best Texas Death Match in AEW history, even better than him and Mox at Revolution, which was an all-timer. I think an argument could be made that this is Hangman's best AEW match, especially because, I mean, he was kind of the main driving force in this one, which I know you would throw out the tag from Revolution, was that 20?
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, he was just one of four, and it kind of felt like that was more about the Bucks and Omega. But this one, you know, the focus was on Hangman as that baby face wanting to get revenge. And man, these two just beat the shit out of each other. I mean, that blood drinking spot, we were both like cackling and just like, it was so gross and incredible.
Dude, I could not. How do you even do that as a human being? My God, that was just insane. Just getting underneath him as the blood is running down and he just catches it in his mouth. Oh my.
Then hops up and spits it in the air. Just, what a incredible visceral moment.
Speaking of incredible, we got Rick Skelton in the chat and he has blessed us with a super chat. 10 Great Britain pounds. Have a beer on me, boys.
Nice.
Thank you, Rick. Nice. Appreciate that. There you go. Super chats are open, you guys. You want to tip us on the show? There you go. Appreciate it, Rick. Rick has been on. If you're not a patron, we're going to plug all that at the end of the show. But Rick has been on our Patreon show many times. A great dude. Glad he could tune in live and appreciate the super chat.
I especially appreciate it because it is just late enough in the day that I have cracked open a beer. So I have something in the glass. And I got to say, it's something I just bought and I don't think I like it. So I'm going to need to use those pounds to go get some new beer.
I thought about pouring a Guinness, but I did not.
That's what I almost did too, because I mistakenly thought Tottenham was playing this morning. So like I legit like got, I was all ready at 8 o'clock. I went downstairs, grabbed my Guinness, and then I went looking for it on the TV and it was like, it's not anywhere to be seen. It was like, oh shit, that's next Sunday. God damn it. But I am drinking a Bikini Bottom Pineapple Wheat from Five Cities Brewing. And I just, I don't think it's very good, and I generally like pineapple or coconut flavored beer.
Same. That's disappointing. I mean I just got a bottle of water here. Very straight vodka. I'm gonna be on the floor by the end of this podcast here. The pile driver, I see John talking about this in the chat, the pile driver on the border rail, that's the thumbnail on this show on YouTube. Crazy. The spot in the corner where he used, they used the barbed wire multiple times, but there was a time like they were up in the corner and it was like pulling out Hangman's hair.
Swerve came up from behind and hit him with the barbed wire covered chair. And when he hit him and then brought it back, but a piece of that barbed wire flew in front of Hangman's face and almost hooked him. I mean, that could have gotten real ugly, but luckily Hangman caught it just in time.
Yeah. And just, I got to rewatch it. There were just so many times where we were having a good time and just reacting to everything. And look, Swerve goes over.
Oh, so we totally missed the lead.
2-0 now against Hangman in this feud. And, you know, we talked about this on the preview show. Do they split it up, have the third match? But we thought, you know, if Swerve won, that would be the one way you could really solidify this guy as a top tier guy moving forward. You know, that was the big criticism as he was getting popular throughout the summer, as he wasn't winning a lot of matches. Now he's won two really big matches, Justin. And like, I don't know about you, I want to see him moved into the world title picture in the next 6 months minimum. Like, I mean, at max 6 months, I want to see this guy continue up the card. He's getting great reactions from the crowd. His character work is unbelievable. He's having great matches. He's got the side stuff going on with the Mogul Embassy, and you got Nana out there who's always getting a good reaction too. I mean, he is hitting on all cylinders right now. What do you see as the future for him? I mean, do you think they go back to him and Hangman even though he's beat him twice?
Well, let me just pause that real quick because I just want to shout out a couple more things from this match. Number one, the talking about the crowd, that opening Who's House, they like huge Swerve's house for his entrance. It was massive, which is a tell. I mean, shit, if they heard that in WWE, he'd be pushed to the tippy top. I want to shout out the blood that Swerve got, the amount of color, which added to, I mean, it was just gushing. And I would be curious to know the spot where he dumped water on it. I want to know if he was trying to accentuate it, because he let it drip onto Hangman, because Hangman's just not a good bleeder. So I was just wondering if he was adding a little color to Hangman, or if he was legit just trying to get the blood out of his eyes. And of course, we have not even mentioned the stapler.
Oh, God. My kids were losing it at that. Just absolutely. And then Swerve starts staple. Was that Swerve was stapling himself, right?
Yes. That was when he had that warrior spirit moment when, oh my God, there it is.
I'm just scrolling some of the pictures as we talk. Yeah.
When Hangman started hitting him with the stapler again, and it like woke Swerve up, and almost kind of like a baby face moment, honestly. Yeah. And then Swerve eventually just started stapling himself. But my God, there was the moment where Hangman stapled his kid's picture into the side of Swerve's cheek.
Oh yeah, 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 the cheek.
And then we had a brief discussion as if teachers should be allowed to do this to students who are a little rowdy.
I better not say anything in the interest of my job. I cannot say anything publicly, but a discussion was had in my basement last night along those lines. Yes.
So yeah, I just wanted to shout out those moments. Just an incredible performance by both of these guys. And that was my takeaway coming out of this, is that these two need to be your next two world champions after MJF. And, you know, talking about the surprise with Will Ospreay, the surprise new signing, I think it'd be too quick, but like, I would love to see Swerve beat MJF at World's End, because I do think there is a growing fatigue with MJF's title reign. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm feeling it too much yet, but I can definitely see it coming, and you definitely hear it and see it online. But I think one way or another, the world title is coming off of MJF at World's End, especially because, you know, the story is going to be about 2024 and who's he signing with. So it makes a lot of sense to get it off of him. So I'd love to see Swerve, although it would not surprise me with the current story they're telling if it's Samoa Joe. Because MJF already beat Samoa Joe at, was that Grand Slam?
Mm-hmm.
And they're building him up. He's a big part of the story. So, you know, especially they tag team last night, they're building to something there. And it would not surprise me if Samoa Joe gets the title at World's End. I just think Swerve Hangman 3 has to be for the world title with the way these first two have gone. And the chemistry between these two. It's too much of a hot potatoing with the title, but if you did like a Swerve to Hangman, and then maybe you build Hangman and Will Ospreay at All In, would kind of be my dream scenario. Although, you know, the bad part of that is those would be probably two short reigns, or one really short reign for either Swerve or Hangman.
Yeah. If I was a betting man for someone to beat MJF right now, it would definitely be Samoa Joe, just how television has gone. But I agree with you. It's like Swerve is right there, and he is. I love Joe. I've been a huge fan of Samoa Joe for God, probably 20 years now. But man, you cannot deny what Swerve Strickland's doing right now, and he deserves to be in that. And then like the scenario you laid out with some of those other possible matches down the line, I would absolutely love that. You say, yeah, the third match between these two for a title match, eventually get to that 6 months from now or something, get that in like Double or Nothing. That would be pretty amazing.
Which should be, because of the story and how the first two have gone, it should be about Hangman dethroning Swerve for the world title. Yes. In my opinion,
since he hasn't beaten him. Yeah. In this feud, that would make the most sense. Yeah.
I mean,
go ahead.
I was just going to add that. I mean, Hangman this past year is just on an all-time babyface run. I mean, dare I say the best babyface in the business right now?
Paige?
Yes.
Yeah. He got some boos though. Remember when he came out? We were noting there were boos in the crowd, and some of that's just because Swerve is so popular.
Exactly.
I see some discussion in the chat right now happening about this. You know, Adam said cool heels are will get cheered right now. And I mean, it's true. He does the call and response, even though he's a heel. I don't have as big of a problem with that as I've seen other people online in discourse having with that. But it's like, yeah, he's the cool heel. I mean, it's kind of like look, The Rock was a lot, most of his career a heel, and people still cheered him because he was cool as hell. I mean, I don't, ever since the late 90s, that's kind of been the case. You know, it's hard to be a true heel. Now, MJF was, no doubt about it, but it's really hard to get that universal reaction if you're good at your job, because wrestling fans today are so smartened up that they just cheer it because they recognize how damn good you are. They don't want to hate you.
Well, see, that's, I mean, exactly, like, what happened.
Times have changed.
That's exactly what happened to MJF. He was the perfect heel who was getting actual boos, but then he got to be too good at it, and the crowd started cheering for him.
True. Yeah. Yeah. When you're looking at this one match of the year wise, Justin, I mean, to me, if we just consider AEW matches this year as match of the year, I mean, I loved the Revolution Iron Man match with Brian and MJF. You know, the strap match that Brian had with Ricky Starks is up there for me as well. I mean, where does this rank in your pantheon of AEW matches of the year? We're not getting into WWE or New Japan because there's been a lot of good wrestling this year, but just as far as AEW goes.
It's possibly recency bias, but I think it'd be number one. And a big part of that is because of the story behind it and how much I just love these two guys and where I think they're going, you know, their trajectory right now. It was just so beautifully executed. Obviously we nitpicked it at the beginning, but that's kind of our job. So
yeah.
But yeah,
I had a brain fart, but the FTR match too, that's in consideration. Match of the year, the collision match that went like an hour with Bullet Club Gold. That was the other one. But this is in that probably top four for me, top four or five.
Yeah. I can't imagine it not being in at least everybody's top five.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me right now, because of the people involved and the execution of it, I think it'd be number one.
Yeah. Omega and Ospreay, obviously too. Yeah. From Forbidden Door. That's up there as well. I think Omega Ospreay too is most people's pick right now. Ooh. Danielson Sabre. Oh,
just for AEW?
For AEW.
Oh yeah. Danielson Sabre, I'd put him up. I hated the finish of Omega Ospreay too. I thought that was kind of shitty.
I think that's the popular pick though.
And but it's like, yeah, I know we're just talking AEW, but I think it's not near as good as their Wrestle Kingdom match.
True. Which, I agree with that too.
I would knock it down for that too.
A lot of good choices. You know, a wealth of great wrestling in this company. And talking about Ospreay, they announced him. We talked about on the preview show, he made the most sense. And pretty much everything I've read since then, the reasons we laid out on the show, the exclusive negotiation that New Japan could give him with AEW, keeping him in their universe. You know, he could keep working some New Japan. He mentioned coming out in LA last night that he's not coming yet. He's got to finish his days with New Japan. He said he'd be on the road to Revolution, so coming over in February and March. It was clearly the signing that made the most sense. And we saw it play out. I was glad it was him. I'm looking forward to being able to see him on weekly television, to have him in that build for All In. It was important for AEW and getting him announced right before the All In tickets go on sale as well here soon. So, I mean, just, it made so much sense for it to be him. You know, we know Ronda Rousey did this show over the weekend for ROH. That kind of came out of her, as I understand it, her Pro Wrestling Revolver appearance. And she basically made the appearance as a favor to her friend Marina. That's basically why it happened. And so I mean, they could bring her in down the line officially. She was just doing like a handshake deal right now. There's no contract between her and AEW ROH. You know, she's just looking to do a favor for her friend.
I know some people were kind of down on the thought of, you know, this surprise signing being Will Ospreay, because like he has wrestled with AEW, but I mean, to your point, this is big because for number one, he's one of the best in the entire world, you know, unquestionably. Maybe his style isn't for everybody, but he's kind of undeniable as far as his stardom goes. And to your point, now we're going to get to see him every week. And that's a big deal, especially when you factor in the fact that WWE was after him too, by all accounts. They tried going after him. So I think this is a huge get and a big win for AEW.
For sure. I think it lived up to everything that Tony Khan put out there in anticipation. One of the best wrestlers in the world, respected by everybody. I thought, you know, sometimes what he puts on social media, they haven't lived up to the hype. I thought this one absolutely lived up to the hype.
And so, as you know, as people are pointing out in our chat here, especially John Hope here, that, you know, he had the second biggest pop at All In, and he's going to be a big reason for everybody to go next year.
Yeah.
That's, you know, going back, talking about how this world title situation is going to work itself out. And maybe one of the reasons why we think it could be Joe is that you don't really want to have Swerve or Hangman with short, meaningless title runs. So with at least Joe, that can be kind of short, just because, you know, he's already a made man. He's a legend. He's a Hall of Famer. So that doesn't have to be long. And maybe then they can go back to MJF, I suppose. I don't know if it makes sense for you to go to like MJF, Samoa Joe, and then Swerve carries it to All In. But I think it's almost a no-brainer that Will Ospreay is probably going to be world champion coming out of All In.
Yeah. Joe also makes sense, as we've talked a lot about on the show in the past, of, you know, Tony Khan being this hardcore Ring of Honor fan back in the day, and and names that he wants to be on the lineage of his world title. And obviously CM Punk was one of them. Now possibly Samoa Joe. I still don't know why Bryan Danielson is not factoring into these title plans at any point. He is another one that you would think, but I would totally make sense. It would totally make sense to have Joe along those lines, Justin.
And I think it's because of how reliable Joe has been. You know, he doesn't really get hurt. Knock on wood, please, Joe, don't get hurt. You know, he shows up there. I think he's a good person to have backstage. You know, he was the one who made sure the match with him and Punk at All In happened, because that was falling apart. And I think he took the reins to make sure. It's like, no, I'm not going to fucking lose my Wembley moment here, buddy. We're going out there and wrestling. So he's someone reliable. And I think Tony has a tendency to reward those kind of people, which is, I think, you know, why we keep seeing people like Kip Sabian popping up every once in a while, is because he was there through the entire pandemic when he needed guys. And Kip was the person who kept showing up for work.
I mean, having a guy that, you know, can remain healthy is big for this promotion, as we've seen these booking plans change a lot.
Well, I just thought of that because, you know, you mentioning Danielson, who unfortunately has not been very reliable in the health department.
Yeah. Yeah. We see Carl is in the chat here. I wanted to throw out Carl Longhorn, who's been on the show many times. He was going to be on this show with us, but not feeling the best, able to join us on the live chat. Hopefully we can get Carl on a show in the future. He did the All In reaction show with us because he had attended the show. Next year, hopefully we can get him back on again, but good to see Carl in the chat.
Get well soon, buddy.
Yeah. Let's just parlay this, since we're talking about the world title, into the whole situation with MJF. And what happened there, you know, the show long story that was going on with MJF getting hurt. So as we mentioned, Samoa Joe teamed with him on the pre-show, and against the Guns, they won. Joe left. And then you get Adam Cole coming out there on his crutches, and he can't really do anything as the Guns attack him. And he takes this chair shot to the knee, and he gets hauled off in the ambulance. Joe didn't help him there, you know, like teasing again, this heat. By the way, Justin, I was going to say this a second ago and I forgot it. One of your great quotes of the night last night: imagine having Samoa Joe under contract and making him an announcer. I just wanted to put that out there. No shit.
I will never forget the visual of seeing him in that rain poncho at WrestleMania 37 as a commentator. It's like, what the fuck are we doing here? It's Samoa Joe.
Right. So, anyways, they go into the pay-per-view, and you don't know if MJF is going to wrestle or not, and he's hauled off in this ambulance. And I mean, I think anybody watching knew he was going to do the big miraculous return. I saw a lot of bitching online about, like, how could they do this? They're going to tank their buy rate because people think you're not going to see MJF wrestle. That never popped into my mind at all. It was just a matter of, I was curious how they'd get there. I assumed he'd get back into the match. I was curious what would happen with Adam Cole. And so I didn't have a problem with this at all. It made me interested, Justin.
Yeah. A lot of people are pissed off about this angle.
Yes.
But like both you and me, I don't think for a second thought that MJF wasn't going to make a miraculous babyface return. Right. And I think I said it right away. It's like, oh, this is Sting at Clash 17. One of my all-time favorite wrestling moments. And the best part actually was that was when he did come back, Ryan started playing Sting's old entrance theme from WCW, which paired very well with MJF making his way back. It was just freaking incredible.
I had to queue it up on my phone just to satisfy Justin's urges. Yes.
But yeah, not for a second did I think we were actually getting Jay White versus Adam Cole. Cause another thing, if you're watching closely, boy, I don't think Adam Cole left any doubt that he is legit injured, because he did not. I mean, he was very, very careful with that leg, which part of you could be thinking is like, well, it's part of the angle, but he did not try and test that thing out at all. Cause there was moments where I was waiting for him to like do a super kick with mm-hmm. the boot or something to make that big heel turn. But they did not play with that at all. He was very tentative with treating that leg right.
So like a lot of the criticisms I'm seeing to this main event, which they went almost 30 minutes, you know, MJF
selling, a problem with that.
MJF selling his injury to his knee and everything. The big problem we had with it live, I'll say, and then I'll go to you on your mm-hmm. other criticism, was that like, we just saw these two guys, Swerve and Hangman, kill themselves out there and live through like attempted murder, essentially. And then MJF comes back and like all he did was take the chair shot to the knee, and we're supposed to think like this guy can barely move it. That was like a bit of a hard to buy aspect of this, yeah. I thought, just because of if you got something else like that on the show, it's hard to take that seriously, right?
Well, especially with the timing that they reminded everybody. It was literally right after the Texas Death Match. They went back to like what happened to MJF, and it's like, do they know what we just witnessed? Right. And now we're supposed to buy into MJF being this injured. It's like, yeah, that's a bridge too far for me.
Yeah. So, I mean, the match itself, the length, what'd you think of that?
Way too long. I mm-hmm. it was good. Like I was invested because I was very curious about how it was going to play out and what the outcome was going to be, but it was way too long. I think MJF went a bit overboard with his selling of the leg, which, you know, we love a good, you know, grab a hold, tell a story, you know, work a leg, work an arm, you know, that is our bread and butter here at Top Rope Nation. But it's just like, when it goes 30 minutes, it's really starts to make Jay White look like a pretty big chump. And it just gets old. It gets really old seeing MJF do all the old, you know, basically he did every version of how you sell a leg injury, you know, just like toppling over because he can't put any weight on it, rubbing it, hitting it, you know, just all the old cliches. And mm-hmm. just if they were able to trim this down to like 15 minutes, I think it would be more widely well regarded.
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was too long. I thought they should have had a short, tight match given the injury that they were selling. He could have done everything they did in the finish much more briefly with the Dynamite Diamond Ring gets involved. And, you know, Cole sets it on the apron. Here it is for you, Max. And, you know, he eventually gets to using it and takes out the guns and gets the victory on Jay White. I think it was an uppercut, wasn't it? Didn't he block the Blade Runner, if I remember right? I did not take many notes on this show. I'm mostly going off of memory. I think he blocked the Blade Runner, hit him. And then got rid of the ring. And then, you know, that was the finishing sequence. So, like, yeah, it was definitely a little overbooked, I would say. I think that criticism is warranted. It shouldn't have been so long. But there was also many times in the match where, like, Adam Cole nearly inadvertently cost him. He still did the hug where it looked like he was stabbing him in the back, you know, afterwards. And so, like, you're still getting the teases that the Cole turn is coming.
Yeah, and somebody in our Facebook chat had said, like, no devil. It's like, well, he wasn't on screen, but they continued that story with the stuff they did with Adam Cole, because even before the ring spot, he went to hit Jay White with the Ring of Honor tag title, and Jay White caught it and then tried to use it on MJF. And
yes,
basically the exact same thing happened again with the ring. And in both instances, the way they filmed it or the way they played it out is it's kind of open to interpretation if Adam Cole was intentionally trying to cost MJF the match or if he was actually trying to help him. So I thought that part of it was well executed. I'm still into that story. Adam Cole still makes a lot of sense to be the reveal as the devil. I just, once again, I said it, I think last week, I'm not interested in seeing him as world champion, especially, you know, going back to who's reliable in the company. Adam Cole doesn't seem to be very reliable health-wise.
No. And we said on the preview, it wasn't guaranteed you'd find out who the devil was on this show. There was no reason they had to unveil it.
I said I did. Yeah.
Yeah, you said you didn't think they would. I mean, it's a long-term story. They can keep telling people. It's captivating people. It's getting discussion going online, which is what it's all about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, keep dragging it on. Might as well. They didn't promise a reveal, and they didn't have to give you that. So, we got the reveal of the free agent. That was the big reveal last night. So, well, yeah, MJF retains.
To our discussion about World's End, that's where we think MJF is going to drop the title. I think that'll most likely be the reveal.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least leading up to that.
Yeah. We're just going to kind of skim the rest of this card because I got about 20 minutes until I have to take my daughter somewhere. I told Justin, we got a hard out of this show. So we're going to go 60 minutes and that's going to be that. I don't really have any deep thoughts on the Golden Jets and the Young Bucks. I mean, the big thing is the Bucks continue to sell this idea that they're turning heel. Apparently, they're going to take some time off TV now and Brandon Cutler is going to be their mouthpiece moving forward. You said it like, on the preview. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and acting like petulant children after the match when they lost.
It just seems like they want to just kind of like act out whatever their grievances are. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, whatever, I guess let them do that. But they're just, they don't seem like key figures on the show right now at all. Now they're going to be off the show for a while. And they seem to be building a stable with Brandon Cutler as the mouthpiece.
Oh, God.
You know, I said that I didn't really want to see the Golden Jets continue, but they are. So you still got Omega and Jericho together. They're going to have a tag team title opportunity. I mean, the match was good. You got the Bucks just throwing a fit afterwards. I just was not that invested going in, and I'm still not that invested coming out, Justin.
Yeah, same, man. I think all of us, especially you and Jesse, had made the point where we kind of, even though we didn't want to see the Bucks win, we definitely didn't want to see Kenny and Jericho win just because of the possible chance it keeps Omega out of that Continental Classic, which I think we all desperately want to see him in that for all the possible matchups. Which, did you see, we did not talk about this last night, what that Continental Classic is going to be for? They're merging three titles. Like, it'll be the Continental Classic, the Ring of Honor World title, and the New Japan Strong, which to me, it's like, that's kind of weird that you're going to lose the Ring of Honor championship. I don't know why they wouldn't just put the TV title in there instead, you know?
Right. Because
that's, you know, nobody has it right now. And yeah, I don't know. I just thought that was a very weird choice. And especially, like, did Eddie agree to this? That he's just going to put both of his titles on the line? That seems super weird.
So when Eddie talked about it, it sounded like it was going to be like every match was for the titles that he had. And then, like, Tony Khan in the press scrum said, like, that's the end game. The finals are for that, I guess. I don't know. There was like the messaging got a little bit lost on that, I think. But I mean, Tony Khan was selling it hard in the press scrum. You know, they even had like the background change when he talked about it from the Full Gear logo to the Continental Classic logo. And did you hear the quote he had about, if you want to see athletic wrestling or something, put your money where your mouth is and tune in. Oh. Like, this is what that's going to be. Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, to John Hope's point here in the chat, I do like the idea that they're combining these three titles to be recognized across, you know, Ring of Honor, AEW, and New Japan. That's kind of a cool, new, unique idea. I just don't like that it's the Ring of Honor World Championship and not the television title, which nobody is holding at this moment.
I would agree. I would 100% agree with that. So outside of that, let's talk about the women's matches here. Justin, Julia Hart, who got a outstanding reaction in Seattle at Wrestle Dream.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. She got a good reaction in California last night, but not what she had at Wrestle Dream. This is the one match, like I said at the show open, that really stood out, as the crowd was super flat during this. And Julia has one of the best characters going in the promotion right now. I mean, usually the crowds are really into her, and they were at times. I thought the match was pretty good. Julia won the title, which is the correct decision. She stole the pin from Statlander, so it keeps Statlander strong,
okay,
who was very good in this match as well. I know this was one of them that you missed. This is when Justin left my house for the bedtime routine. But I mean, like, overall, I liked the match. I was happy with how it turned out. I just wish the crowd would have popped more for it, but happy to see Julia get that moment. She was on the press scrum afterwards, and she talked about, you know, how brief her career has been here. They brought up the cheerleader gimmick that she used to have, and she like rolled her eyes and looked at Tony and was like, oh, the cheerleader thing, which is pretty funny. And she said that when she started training at the Nightmare Factory, she hoped to be on TV when she was 26, and, you know, she's 22 and wow, has a title now. So I she's one of the great homegrown stories of this promotion right now, mm-hmm, just in the women's division, which has struggled a lot. You know, her character work's been fantastic. I think I've said this before. She is what WWE wanted Alexa Bliss to be, but actually cool, you know, with that dark character and not like cringeworthy, turn the channel bad,
yeah,
with when they had Alexa doing the stuff. So yeah, this was the right decision. Could go any other way, I didn't think.
I didn't see this, but it feels like the right outcome. Mm-hmm. Statlander's reign was a little stale. The only thing I'm surprised about is that Sky Blue didn't factor more into the finish. I figured she'd be helping Julia Hart here. And
they had a spot where they were like gonna shake hands, and then Julia went after her, and she commented on this in the press scrum, something about like, why, you know, why would I help her? I wanted to take her out or something like that. So but yeah, there was, it seemed at the beginning like they were going to team up, but then they ended up going after each other. So it was a pretty decent match. I thought it was overall pretty much what they needed to do. And then, you know, same thing. Actually, I'm looking at Cage Match right now. It has a pretty good score in Cage Match. It's over 7, which is pretty high for there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, it was a good match. Worth watching. The other women's match with Toni Storm and Sheeta, right decision with Toni Storm winning. We got Mariah May after the match was over. This one was not as good. And some of it had to do with what they planned for the finish, where Toni was using a foreign object to win. So she had like this little like metal ladle type thing that she basically kept trying to hide in her trunks. But the problem was her trunks were so skimpy that you could totally see it still when she put it back there. Like, she put it on her backside and it was just all hanging out. She kept like trying to adjust it, but you could still see it. And then basically the idea was she put this metal object back there, and, you know, then she hits her move into the corner where she smashes up against her, and like her butt's going to take out Sheeta with the metal ladle in there. But that side did not hit her at all, and they still went with that with the finish. Ooh. And it was kind of like partially falling out, but she got the win right after that spot. So that was the finish. You know, like, she tried to use her shoe and the ref said no, the shoe went flying into the crowd, and then like she was given this.
Yeah, it sounds a little convoluted, kind of a wet fart of a finish to the end of Sheeta's title reign. That was kind of a wet fart to begin with.
Yeah, this was the weakest match on the show, I would say. I mean, it's just the right outcome. I'm glad that she has the title. Never made sense to put it on Sheeta at all, as we said on the show. But yeah, the match could have been better.
I mean, it says a lot that, you know, part of my routine with putting my boy down is I'll just lay there, hopefully, you know, usually long enough for him to fall asleep, then I sneak out and I'll just scroll through Twitter on my phone while I'm waiting for him to fall asleep. And I was doing that last night, and I did not see a single mention of that match, which I ended up just having to text you. He's like, dude, what happened? Did Tony win?
Right. Yeah, it was, yeah, not the best. So that happened. And then let's see what else, what order are we going to go in here?
I mean, just hit the other one that I missed.
The tag title, the ladder match.
I totally missed that match too.
This has a very high rating on Cage Match, 7.8 right now. Excellent match. spot fests. You know, they did this stuff where they wedged the ladder on the outside and it wouldn't break, and they kept taking falls on there. I was kind of helping with bedtime during this, so I was kind of in and out watching it. But I mean, Bill and Ricky retained, which going in, there was just so little. We were actually kind of surprised because we missed Collision this week. And when that started, we were like, wait, this wasn't always a ladder match, was it? So they had added the ladder match stipulation on Collision, the Collision Rampage night on Friday. And I guess just to build more interest in it, it ended up being a hell of a match. It's just like, emotionally wise, I wasn't connected because there was not really much of a feud for any of these three other teams going in. But it, as a match on its own, it certainly delivered. It was a hell of a contest, I thought.
Yeah. The one thing I heard was that Black and King might have been the MVPs of this match, which honestly makes me want to go back and watch it because, you know, their AEW run has been a little lackluster. So maybe this could be a jumping off point for those guys doing something a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like I said, especially the spots to the outside with like the ladder, when they were falling on the ladder, they would make you cringe and jump out of your chair a little bit. There's lots of high spots in this. I didn't write down notes, but it was a good match. It was a spectacle. It's what you expect in a ladder match. So that was one that's definitely worth watching. What was the match? It wasn't this one, was it, where the table broke? You were here when that happened, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was MJF and Jay White. Because MJF
just still did it. Yeah.
Yeah. He just went ahead and did the flying elbow off the top of the rope to the outside.
That was nuts, man.
Regardless. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that table had kind of been run into all night. And we had mentioned right when that happened, it was like, geez, I don't know if that thing's going to stand. And like right after that, it just collapsed. Oh, that's bad.
Which, you know, great job on MJF saying, fuck it, I'm doing this anyways. You know,
it was like he just had a burst of an adrenaline and he's like, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to go up there and do it. And he did. And yeah, it was wild.
It was gnarly.
Yeah. Cassidy and Moxley. 12 minutes. The correct decision. Talked a lot on our pre-show about this one as well, that Cassidy really needed the win, just how the story had gone with him just not being able to get one over on John Moxley. He finally does. And they hint that the stuff going on with the best friends in Blackpool Combat Club is not over. You know, lots of scowls as their teammates all took them all out after the match. This was one of the first two matches. So this is when we were dealing with our children making a lot of noise. Yeah. And it's one I definitely need to go back and rewatch. But from what I remember watching it, I thought it was pretty damn good. I don't think I thought it was as good as All Out, but
no,
I thought it was.
No.
Yeah, it was still a good match.
Yeah, and it was telling a slightly different story too, with Moxley almost coming off as impenetrable, you know, with Orange's offense and Orange kind of achieving victory regardless of that, or overcoming that, I should say. I'm curious to know what the original plan was here. Is if it was for Moxley to carry the international title to Full Gear for Orange to beat him, or if maybe Orange Mox 2 was slated for a lot further down the road.
Yes.
But because once again, the injuries. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't heard anything on that, but that would be interesting to know for sure.
And, you know, if I think this match would be a little bit more beloved or more talked about if all that stuff hadn't happened with Moxley getting injured and then the title going back to Orange and whatnot. I think it would have been a better story if things had gone to plan.
Yeah. So we got Moxley bleeding. No surprise. Remember Cassidy though, bled all over it All Out. And so it was kind of like payback here that he was able to get Moxley bleeding in this match. And, but yeah, he goes over the correct decision. Happy to see him retain. And our opening match, the 6-man tag. We didn't get the heel turn out of Adam Copeland. We were kind of fantasy booking on the preview. I think that would have been pretty enticing, but no, you know, Sting's team wins. Sting stays undefeated. Copeland, Darby, and Sting over the Patriarchy. I love that name.
Yes. So good. Fucking Cage love Christian so much.
Children's choir singing to the ring. God, that was amazing. This guy had the best run of his career at 50 years old.
It's just that he's just the absolute best work of his life this past year. It's incredible. Yeah.
I mean, how about, think about if you're Nick Wayne out there, this young kid working with like a freaking laundry list of Hall of Famers here.
Yeah. And honestly, I thought he was really good in this match too. I mean, he did his job exactly right, as almost playing that like 1-2-3 kid role, you know, just the guy who's going to get beat up the entire time.
Yeah. Darby took some crazy falls during this match. There's one where he landed on the ring apron, like going over the top rope. Oh, really? Jesus.
That choke slam from Luchasaurus. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's that was gnarly looking.
Yeah.
And even his, I think it was his flip or his dive to the outside when I think Luchasaurus had caught Nick Wayne. Like that looked like it could have gone horribly bad, but Darby was able to kind of pop out of the way before Luchasaurus fell backwards. But that was really good.
Yeah.
Should be pointed out, the one thing we did not need to see in this match was Ric Flair and Ric Flair getting physical. Get that dude off of our fucking television.
Yeah. You just knew it happened eventually. It didn't take long. He got a good response from the crowd though when he came out.
Unfortunately, people love him. It did. The one good thing about him being out there is it did lead to what I thought was my comment of the night, was when after the match, Sting went over to like hug or handshake some guy standing at, you know, or who was ringside. And you were like, is that David Flair? I was like, his cheeks aren't red enough.
Yes. That was great.
So it turns out, I think that was Sting's son.
Some other people online have mentioned it. At first, it kind of looked like David Flair, but then, your comment, you were right. You were definitely right. So then Christian just takes off through the crowd to avoid getting beat up anymore. Leaves the rest of his guys out there to take the L. I thought throughout, like, Luchasaurus looked pretty strong. Like, he took on multiple guys at different points in the match. That was good to see. Keep building him up as this force. But, yeah, in the end, it's Christian taking off, and the baby faces stand tall. They all had face paint on. They came out together to Copeland's theme song. But
I love that presentation. Sting
face paint.
Yeah, I thought really that good. Was really well done.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that was full gear, as briefly as we can do it without getting too much into the details, but hitting the broad strokes of this. I think, like I said at the top, there's criticism out there that's warranted, but I think some people are just getting too in over their heads with some of this criticism and thinking too hardly on it. I mean,
they're
too
either,
hard on it.
They're
hardly
either
thinking, I mean to say.
Yeah. They're either getting worked or they're just looking for any reason to dislike AEW, in my opinion.
Just like trying to be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah.
Like at some point, yes, there's stuff to complain about, but like, if you didn't think MJF was going to be in that main event and that turned off people from buying, I don't know what to tell you. Because, I mean, if you've watched wrestling at all, you know the guy's coming back. It was to drum up interest in how they do that. And then you get a match of the year contender. I can't imagine not being satisfied with the show or giving it less than a B. Excellent show. Fun way to spend a Saturday night, as always. And lots of intrigue on some of these stories moving forward. We got new champions. I think we predicted all the title changes on our preview show as they laid out. Jesse commented on that in our text. And also, by the way, Jesse couldn't be on the show today because fatherly duties called him. He's been in the chat occasionally today, though, I have seen. So I think Jesse will probably be putting out another Unplugged in the not so distant future on our Patreon page, you guys. So if you want to support our show, the best way to do it, link is here in the description, is by becoming a patron. Lately, like 3, 4, 5 bonus shows a month have been dropping on Patreon. Honestly, we've had Patreon since 2016. We have never released more content on Patreon than we are right now. Just adding Jesse to the mix and him doing his show behind the paywall there has been huge. We've been dropping classics. I've been dropping some extras on there as well. And so the next time you hear from us on the flagship will be the Survivor Series review. Usually we go live Thursday nights, but this Thursday is Thanksgiving. We're not going to be doing that. I probably will be dropping many, many years ago. I did a history of the Survivor Series segment on, it was one of our first 10 shows. This was in 2016. Longtime listeners know what I'm talking about, but me and Kyle basically went through the early days of why the Survivor Series was created and the rivalry with Crockett Promotions and everything. I will probably post that on our main feed on Thursday, just for any of the new listeners who haven't heard it, just to get it out there again in front of people. It's also on our YouTube page. You can find it there.
Great
show. But yeah, But yeah, that was a fun one. I love the history aspect of that and did a ton of research when we recorded that. And so if you've never heard it, look for that Thursday. Hopefully you'll enjoy that. And then yeah, next weekend, Survivor Series already. So we'll be coming at you with that review as well. And totally a full-on WWE show. So this was all AEW. The next time it'll be WWE. And then next week, we're also recording a new Top Rope Nation Classics for Patreon, Survivor Series 95. Just another reason to support us and get over there on the Patreon page. If you're watching on YouTube right now, please hit subscribe. That would help us a lot. And get the bell notification on. So anytime we go live, you get an alert and you can join us live. It was good to see the active chat room today. Yeah. I told the guys Thursday night, our chat room was not that active and it was a little disappointing, but we got a lot of people here today. So glad that we could take advantage of the earlier time slot, Justin.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody who joined us for this show. It's appreciated. Yes.
And it's 4 o'clock on the nose, Justin. We're pros, man. I told you I had to get out by 4 o'clock. It is 4 o'clock right now. That wraps it, you guys. Appreciate all of you tuning in. Episode 318 of Top Rope Nation. We'll talk to you all again soon.
Nice. He's coming down the ramp. He's not injured. He's going to fight through the pain. It's MJF. He's going to do this thing.
Awesome. See you guys next time.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.